We're continuing the Shir in Sichos Saran. We're in the middle of paragraph 89, and we spoke about the fact that Rabbeinu Zal said that one of the ways that a person gets Hashem to activate his 13 attributes of kindness and help us with them is by the person performing acts of kindness. But we mentioned that when a person is extremely poor, they don't have what to be kind with. So what do? So Rabbeinu Zal said that person can't do it with acts of kindness. They simply have to pray and plead with and beseech Hashem to show his kindness. And Rabbeinu Zal says now that this is what's meant in the Pasuk in Tehillim, chapter 87, where the Pasuk says, Al tizkor lonu avoinois rishonim, Hashem, please do not remember our first sins. Maher yekadmunu rachmecho, please have your kindness quickly come towards us. Kidaloinu moed, because we're extremely poor. Meaning, what do we mean by the first sins? This goes back to what we mentioned in the beginning of this paragraph, that when a person commits sins, there's a sin that the person commits, and that becomes a leader of a pack. That sin causes another sin, chas v'shalom, which leads into another sin, and it forms a chain. And in every chain, there's that first one, which is the one that the person initiated, sort of. And once he initiates that one, it becomes almost natural and very easy for that to lead to the next one and the next one. But the moment we chop off the head of that first one, the entire chain gets knocked out. So we're pleading with Hashem here, Hashem, please don't remember those first sins of each and every bundle, but rather remove them. Like we mentioned before, Mavir Rishoin Rishoin, that when Hashem really wants to be kind to us, he removes those first ones. And through that, automatically the entire bundle gets knocked out. However, we said that usually in order for that to happen, the person has to fulfill the 13 acts of kindness in order to get Hashem to show this kindness. But therefore we say to Hashem, Hashem, please, you arouse your kindness speedily, kidaloinu ma'oi, because we're very poor. And because we're so poor, we don't have rachmanis. We mentioned earlier, when a person's in a state of real poverty, he's in a state of din, in a state of judgment. He can't activate kindness. Therefore, we spread out our hands to Hashem and plead with him that Hashem himself should turn on those 13 attributes of kindness, because we do not have the ability to do an action to activate them because we're so poor. And if Hashem will do that, and then if Hashem will do that, through that Hashem will no longer remember our first sins. He'll eliminate them, and then the entire bundles will be erased. Paragraph 90, Tzaddik. Rabbeinu Zal says you should know that every single person, right before he goes to sleep, he sees all the souls of their relatives that have passed away, or all the souls of people who are from the same root. Just as before a person dies, the Zohar HaKadosh tells us in Parshas Vayechi, page 218, that the person sees all the souls of their relatives who passed away. We know the Gemara says in Brachas, page 57, that sleep is 1/60th of death. And therefore, when a person's going to sleep, right before they fall asleep, also, they see all of these relatives or the souls that are of a similar root. However, because of the fact that this vision is a fleeting vision. It goes by very quickly, because before a person passes away, then, even then, there are differences between people. A great person, a holy person, sees the souls completely. He sees them clearly. An ordinary person, even before they pass away, they only see it as a fleeting thing, very, very quickly, where they can't really focus on it in any way. Now, because of the fact that sleep is only 1/60th of death, so therefore what a person sees then is only 1/60th of what they would see when they pass away. So it's even less. And therefore the person doesn't realize it. In the case of most people, they don't realize this at all whatsoever, even though in actuality it is taking place. We know that the eye, the way the eye operates, Rabbi Nizal speaks about this in a few chapters in Likut Imran. In order for the eye, in order for the person's brain to realize that they're seeing something, the eye has to send out a beam to that item, it has to connect with that item, and then it has to return and bring that item, bring the image of that item back into the eye. That takes a certain amount of time. And if the item is really fleeting very quickly, sometimes there isn't enough time. So that even though the eye has actually seen the thing, but there wasn't enough time to be able to bring it back through the brain, back to the eye, in a manner that the person really knows and realizes what they saw. The next paragraph, 91, is mentioned both here in Sichai Saran, Rabbi Nachman's wisdom, and it's also mentioned in the Sefer Chayim Oharan. In Chayim Oharan, it's paragraph 34. There we're given the details in Chayim Oharan of when this took place, that this was actually on Erev Rosh Hashanah of the last Rosh Hashanah before Rabbeinu Zal passed away, Tov Kuf Ayin Aleph, that a person approached Rabbeinu Zal and asked him for advice regarding Hasmoda. Hasmoda means diligence, to really be consistent about learning, to learn constantly, never to get bored, never to get tired, never to get turned off in any way, but to be able to really persist. And Rabbeinu Zal said to the person that the advice is to make sure not to say anything negative about any Jew. And now we go back into the Sichai Saran, because just as a kala, a bride, is when she's beautiful, when the groom perceives her as being completely beautiful, then the love between them is 100%. However, if the bride has any blemish or something's missing, something's wrong, then the love is no longer complete. Rabbeinu Zal said, so too the Torah is called a kala, a bride. We know the Pasuk says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Moirosha kehilas Yaakov. That Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah, it is Moirosha. Moirosha means a tradition, but the Gemara says in Brachas, page 57, that don't read the word Moirosha, read it Me'urasa. Me'urasa means our betrothed. The Torah is our betrothed. It's our bride. So therefore, in order to really appreciate the bride, you have to be able to not to arouse any blemishes, any deficiencies. And Rabbeinu Zal went on to explain, each and every single Jew has a letter in the Torah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. corresponding to the 600,000 basic souls of the Jewish people. We know that the word Yisrael makes up the first letters, Yesh, Shishim, Ribui, Oisiois, LaTorah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Therefore, when there's something lacking in a Jew, when something's wrong with a Jew, it means that there's something wrong with the Torah, with that, with the letter of the Torah that corresponds to that person. And therefore, we know that one letter that's off in the Torah, the whole Torah becomes puzzle. So therefore, the love for the Torah can no longer be complete. Whereas if a person will be careful to avoid saying anything wrong about a Jew or finding anything wrong in a Jew, but rather focusing on the positive, then there's nothing lacking in the Torah. There's no deficiency. There's no defect. Then the person will love the Torah tremendously, and then the person will be zecher to real hasmoda in learning Torah out of this great love for it. And Rabbi Nizal said this is included in the pasuk in Tehillim, chapter 19, Toiras Hashem Temima, that when the Torah is complete, without lacking, without any letters being off, without any letters being imperfect, without any blemish, meaning that we're careful not to speak against any Jew, not to find anything wrong with any Jew who's a letter in the Torah, then Meshivas Nefesh. Then, as a result of the love for the person has for the Torah, and he feels a sweetness in the Torah, then the Torah restores the soul of the person because it's complete, it's whole, it's perfect. And then the person will have this true hasmoda. Now, when Rabbi Nizal told this to this person who asked him this, the person asked Rabbi Nizal, what if you see that the person is a complete Rasha? And Rabbi Nizal got angry at him and said, how do you say about a Jew that he's a complete Rasha? There's definitely a little bit of good or some spark of good, where in that aspect, that little bit of good, he's not a Rasha. And that's when Rabbi Nizal mentioned the pasuk that's mentioned in chapter, the famous chapter 282 in Likut Imran. The pasuk Ve'oid Ma'at Ve'ein Rasha. That if we can find a little bit of good in a person, then he's no longer a Rasha. And there in chapter 282, Rabbi Nizal expounds on this tremendously, that when a person is able to do this, to see the good in another person, in many cases that can actually cause that person to turn around. It can actually change the person, and certainly change the person's status in heaven, that he's no longer on the side of debit, but rather to put him on the side of zechus, on the side of merit. Paragraph Tzadik Beis, 92. Rabbi Nizal says that when a soul comes to the world, then whatever special thing that soul is meant to accomplish in the world, that becomes elevated. From the moment that soul enters into the world, the action, the most important thing that person is supposed to accomplish starts happening from the moment the person's born. For example, if the soul, that person is supposed to be a chacham, a major Talmud chacham, then the chachma in the world gets an elevation from the day that person is born until the day that person passes away. So too, if the soul is a soul of kingdom, rulership, authority, then kingdom, everything related to kingdom and leadership will have an elevation from the time that soul is born till the person passes away. And based on the quality of the chachma and what type of chachma it is, that particular chachma gets elevated from the time that the soul comes into the world. And so too regarding malchus, depending on what particular type of leadership this soul is meant to achieve in the world, that specific type of leadership or kingdom or rulership will have an elevation. Now Rabbeinu Zal tells us that a person's life is divided into three parts. There's Yemei Aliyah, there's the days when a person is developing and growing and advancing. Then there's the Yemei Amida, when the person has hit a certain plateau and they try to maintain that plateau for a certain period of time. And then there's Yemei Yerida. There's a time when a person starts going down, becoming weaker. For example, Rabbeinu Zal says, if a person's going to live 70 years or 100 years, then the first third of their life is Yemei Aliyah, then Yemei Amida, and then Yemei Yerida. And during the Yemei Amida, that's when the person, that middle period, that's when the person is in their fullest strength. And Rabbeinu Zal says, this resembles the moon in a sense. Because the moon, at the time that it first becomes visible, it's very small. And then during the first half of the month, it grows, it becomes larger and larger until it becomes almost like the size of the sun. And that's the period of Amida, the peak. And then after the 15th of the month, it starts becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. And Rabbeinu Zal says the moon is associated with moisture, wetness. And this is why the sea, from the time that the moon, the new moon is born, the sea starts rising and rising. And then towards the end of the month, the sea becomes lower and lower. Those that know that the tides, that what we call the tides of the ocean, are affected by the moon. Rabbeinu Zal continues that things that people say publicly, the more that these things are told over, the more they become accepted. And Rabbeinu Zal says, this is the concept of what the Gemara says in many places, Hainu da'amri inshi. This is what people say. That because people are saying this, because it's become a thing that's common for people to say, even if it's things that start off by non-Jews, it could be an expression or something that initiated by non-Jews, but then gradually it enters into the Jewish people and it gets discussed among the Jewish people and it becomes accepted and it actually becomes holy things. And Rabbeinu Zal says this is similar in concept to the seawater, the water of the ocean. We know that the water of the ocean is very salty. It starts out being salty, something that a person can't really drink. However, as the water passes through mountains of sand, the sand sweetens the water. It removes the salt from it. And then the water becomes drinkable. And Rabbeinu Zal did not explain the connection between this and what he mentioned before about statements that are initially started by non-Jews, and the more they're mentioned publicly, and then it enters into the Jewish world, and it becomes accepted, and it becomes an elevated thing. Rabbeinu Zal did not explain what the kesher is between these things. We know that fortunately, in Rabbeinu Zal's Sforim, there are many things that we can understand to a degree on our level, even though we know there are deeper and deeper and higher levels, and whatever level we understand it on, there's much, much higher. There are certain things that it's perfectly clear to us that we don't understand. And yet it's written, it was brought, Rabbeinu Zal understood that it had to be put into the world, and it's at the right time, it'll be made clear. The next paragraph, Tzadik Gimel, 93. It's interesting. We're going to see here that it's a very deep concept. Rav Nosson Zal says that this was between the high holidays and Hanukkah of the year 5567, which means about 4 years before Rabbeinu Zal passed away, when Rav Nosson Zal was away, he was in the city of Molov. At that time, Rabbeinu Zal had a baby boy that was born on Shabbos, and he was given the name Yaakov, Zichron Levracha. And Rav Nosson Zal writes that unfortunately, he wasn't privileged to be there at the birth. He wasn't privileged to be there for the Bris Milah. To travel from Molov to where Rabbeinu Zal was a travel of a few weeks. And during the week of the Bris Milah is when Rabbeinu Zal said what this Torah that we're about to mention now, about dividing the light of thousands into hundreds. And Rabbeinu Zal said that a person who understands this would know how to bring the dead back to life. And Rav Nosson Zal said what initiated this was that one of the great rabbis there, Reb Leib Dayan, brought a gift to Rabbeinu Zal on the night before the bris. We know that among Ashkenazim, both among Ashkenazim and Sfardim, the night before the Bris Milah is a special night. By the Sfardim, they have a fabulous custom that they get together with a minyan or more than a minyan, and they recite things from the Zohar HaKodesh. They recite many things, a whole special reading by Ashkenazim. There are those, it's called the Vachnacht, which means the wake, the night that's awake, where the father, if he's able to, stays up that entire night, learning, praying the night before the Bris Milah of his son. And this Reb Leib Dayan brought a gift of fish for the Bris Milah to Rabbeinu Zal with tremendous joy. And that's when Rabbeinu Zal revealed this incredible deep Torah. Rabbeinu Zal says, Da, you should know that there is a light which shines in 1,000 worlds. This light, an ordinary person can't handle it because it's so high a level. It requires a very high level chacham, a very learned person who has the ability to divide this light of thousands into hundreds, meaning into smaller portions, so that people on a lower level can be able to receive it piecemeal. Just like Rabbeinu Zal said, for example, when a person gives a deep explanation of a Gemara, or they show a chiluk, they give a pilpul about a Gemara, trying to point out a difference, how something that seems to be very straightforward and simple, there are actually several different sides to it, or several different ways of looking at it. And sometimes these pilpulim are very deep, and an ordinary person can't follow it, because it's not really possible to give over half of it, to split it in half. It's something that has to be delivered as a complete package. However, when it's broken up into individual pieces and like building blocks, and the person is given one building block and another building block and another, then it's possible to put it together and to be able to get the entire picture. So too, regarding this light, which shines in a thousand worlds, and it's one portion of light. Still, it's impossible for most people to be able to achieve it in its entirety, and not even as in 50-50, because it's one huge light. However, a Talmud Chacham who has the attribute that he's vengeful, he would know how to divide that light into that light of thousands into hundreds, meaning a high level light to break it down into lower levels so that people can handle it. Now this concept of a Talmud Chacham who's vengeful, that gives him the ability to divide this light of thousands into hundreds, Rabbeinu Zal said, is brought in a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk there says, "V'shoyne bedovor mafrid aluf." A person who harps on something separates the prince. This is the wording in the pasuk. Rashi, in explaining that pasuk, says that when it says a person who harps on something, it means he's strong about it. That this refers to a Talmud Chacham who is noikem v'noiter. Meaning that he's vengeful and vindictive when something is done wrong to him. Through this, he separates himself from Hashem, who is the prince of the world. This is what Rashi says. However, Rabbeinu Zal comments, we know the Gemara says in Yuma, page 23, that a Talmud Chacham must have this quality. He must have this attribute sometimes of being noikem v'noiter, of being vengeful and vindictive. In fact, the Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham who is not like that, he's not vengeful and vindictive like a snake, is not a Talmud Chacham. So then what does the pasuk mean? Rabbeinu Zal says it means that a Talmud Chacham who's vengeful, v'shoyne dovor, mafrid aluf, will have the ability to split up. Mafrid means to separate. Aluf means elef, thousands. He will know how to take this light of thousands and separate it, break it down into hundreds. And this is what the Gemara says in Shabbos, page 63. The Gemara says, if you see a Talmud Chacham who is vengeful and vindictive like a snake, bind him to your loins, tie him tightly to yourself, because eventually you'll benefit from his learning. Meaning, when a person sees that, sometimes he gets scared. Well, I'm afraid he'll bite me, he'll hurt me. The Gemara says, if he has that attribute and he's using it properly, don't run away. Attach yourself to him and you'll benefit from his learning. Because the fact that he has this attribute, this vengefulness, this vindictiveness, like I said, this gives him the ability to divide this light of thousands into hundreds, which means to take very high-level concepts and be able to bring it down. To be able to bring it down to a level that people on a lower level can understand it. And without that, it would not be possible to be able to receive that light because it's way above their level. However, the reason behind this, why the vengefulness and vindictiveness of the Talmud Chacham, that's what gives him this ability, Rabbein Azal said, that's something that's very, very deep. And Rabbein Azal said, a person who understands this will know how to bring the dead back to life. Will have the ability to bring the dead back to life. Like the Gemara says in Pesachim, page 68, that there'll come a time in the future when tzaddikim will bring the dead back to life. And that person also understands, really understands well, what is a dead person. Because as a result of being able to divide this light of thousands into hundreds, and bringing the thousands into the hundreds, through that he converts from death. We know the Hebrew word for death is mavis, mem, vav, tof. The word for hundreds is meos. It's mem, aleph, vav, tof. We're talking about taking the aleph, the eleph, the thousands, and bringing it down to meos, to hundreds. By bringing the aleph into that word. This is an incredible insight by Rabbein Azal. And Rabbein Azal said, a person who doesn't know this, doesn't understand, has no idea what they're happy about now, what there is to be happy about now. And they don't understand the true depth behind Baruch Shem Kevoid Malchusoy Leolam Voed. And they don't understand what the Gemara refers to in Pesachim, page 56, where the Gemara speaks about a very delicious kind of pudding that's made by people who are very low class. The Gemara over there in Pesachim tells us that the Gemara there discusses why is it that when we say Shema, we say it out loud. When we say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Eloylam Voed, we say it quietly, we whisper it. So the Gemara says there that this could be compared to a princess who smelled this delicious pudding that's made by people of a very, very low class. So that on one hand, because this princess is royalty, for her to ask for that kind of food would be way, way below her dignity. And yet she loves it. She'd love to have it. So the Gemara says, tell it to her. It's insulting. Don't tell her, she's in pain. And therefore, they bring it to her, silently, hiddenly, when nobody sees. Now, as if it were known and shown in the open that she's being given, that she's eating this, it would be an insult to her honor. So it's gotta be done on the sneak. So too, this Baruch Shem Kevoid Malchus Eloylam Voed, here we're declaring that Hashem's kingdom reaches down to the lowest, lowest places. And therefore, even though on one hand we're making a very, very special statement, it's something that has to be said in silence. And Rabbein Azal said, again, a person who doesn't understand this fully, this whole concept of the thousands and the hundreds, doesn't understand what the chash of chashmal is all about. Because we know that the word chashmal is a term that's used about the throne of Hashem, a very high level of light, and the Gemara discusses several meanings of this term chashmal. One of the interpretations is that the word chash means silent, like the word lachash, tefillah balachash. The word mal means to speak. And the Gemara says this refers to specific group of angels, which sometimes they're quiet, sometimes they speak. Itim choshois, itim amalalois. So again, the chash refers to the silence, just like the Baruch Shem Kvoid Malchus Eilam Voed that's said in silence. And the person also doesn't know what noiga is. The pasuk says in Yecheskel, in the beginning of Yecheskel, that there's a twilight called noiga that surrounds the throne of Hashem. And the person doesn't know what Maisa Merkava is, the whole vision of Yecheskel Anovi about the throne. And they also don't know what bris is. And the person also doesn't know why people are opposing them, why they're experiencing opposition. Rabbeinu Zal goes on to say, Moshiach is the one who understands, who will understand all of this completely. Whereas tzaddikim don't understand this other than when they're able to divide these thousands into hundreds. And these tzaddikim, we said, they're the ones who are vengeful and vindictive, and they will be like a belt for Moshiach. Like the Gemara said, if you see a Talmud Chacham that's vengeful and vindictive like a snake, bind him to you, tie him around you like a belt. That's this concept of a belt for Moshiach. As the Pasuk says in Yeshaya chapter 11, Vahoyo tzedek ezor mosnov, that righteousness will be like a belt around the loins of Moshiach. And the Targum says, Vihoin tzadikayo schor schorle, that Moshiach will be surrounded by tzadikim. And again, Rabbeinu Zal says this refers to someone who has the ability to divide this light of thousands into hundreds. Now, one more point. Rabbeinu Zal said this is also the concept of motun motun. Motun motun, mesinus, means the ability to wait, to be patient. The word mesin means patience. And it also is like the term hundreds, meos. Because in Aramaic, the word mosnecha, loins, the word for it is mosin. And it's similar to the word moson in Aramaic, which means hundreds. And Rabbeinu Zal goes on to say, these tzaddikim give life to all the lower level tzaddikim. It would be extremely, extremely painful if there were no explanation for this. However, in Likutei Halachos, in several places, Rav Nosson Zal expounds on this sicha and gives incredible insights to this. One of the locations is in Likutei Halachos Choshen Mishpat, Hilchos Eidus, Halacha Dalit. Another source is Likutei Halachos Orach Chaim, Hilchos Pesach, Halacha Tes, paragraph Lamed Gimel. And then a third place is in Likutei Halachos Evan Hoezer, Hilchos Kiddushin, Halacha Gimel, paragraph Tes Zayin. All of these have been recorded, Baruch Hashem. All of these are available in print. And they've also been recorded. They're available on our website, Baruch Hashem. If we have the opportunity, maybe we'll come back to this at a different time and give a little bit of clarity. The next sicha, paragraph 94, Tzadik Dalid. Rabbeinu Zal says you should know that when there's peace in a city, when there's no conflict at all, no debate, no disagreement at all, it's because there are no intelligent people in the city. Because the Gemara says in the Yerushalmi in Brachas chapter 4, Imein das havdola minayin. If there's no intelligence, how can people have discretion? How can people differentiate? Whereas when there is a bar das, when there is an intelligent person in the city, and that intelligent person is sharing his intellect, he's presenting his ideas, then there'll be people who will be receptive to what he's saying, they'll agree with him, they'll attach themselves to him, and there'll be people who oppose him. So here again, a person would think at first that, wow, those people are the finest, smartest people possible if they're able to live together in peace. That when Mashiach comes, we know there's going to be a level of das. We're told that then, ki molo ha'oretz deyas Hashem, the world will be filled with knowledge of Hashem on such a high level that there'll be peace. The gor zevim keves, the wolf and the sheep will be able to live together in peace and harmony from an extraordinary level of das that everyone will have. And the das will be a mutual recognition of Hashem. Each one on their level will recognize Hashem Echad, the one Hashem. However, today we're not there. We're very far from that. So today, unfortunately, if we see a place like that where people get along well, quiet, everything's quiet and calm, it could easily be a reflection of what Rabbeinu Zal just said.